This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. This message is a warning.
Everyone, hang on!
Karabast. Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions.
Let's go get him.
All right, if I tag along?
I'm on my mark. Get down!
My name is Rex.
The rebels of the Lothal system. Hunt them down. My gut tells me this is a trap.
Everywhere we go, we run into those guys.
Kenobi!
To defeat an enemy, you must know them.
I'm not afraid.
That's what worries me.
Embrace your destiny.
We are fighting a bigger fight.
He was my master.
Ahsoka, why did you leave? Do you know what I've become?
Yes, master.
And now, here are your hosts, Aaron Harris and David Myers.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, everybody. We are back for part three of our Mortis review arc. I'm your host, one of your hosts now, Aaron Harris. And joining me, of course, is my co-host, as always, Mr. David Motter. David, how are you doing?
Good, my friend. How are you doing over there?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much. And we got a great show tonight. We're wrapping up our series on the Mortis arc tonight. It's going to be a great discussion as we wrap up that three-part arc of Overlords, Altar of Mortis, and Ghosts of Mortis, and discuss the effects it had on Rebels and on the saga in general. So it's going to be a lot of fun to discuss this and see where the discussion leads. And of course, joining David and I for this awesome discussion, brought in an old friend of ours, friend of the show. You may know him from Legends Library, where he's one of the co-hosts there. He's an awesome guy, all around great guy, great Star Wars fan. Mr. Randy Theriault. Randy, how are you tonight?
I'm doing great. Hey, David, how are you doing?
Good.
Thank you so much, guys, for the invite to join you. And I've been listening to your shows, and really excited about your collaboration. And now you're teaming up with the two of you. And so thank you so much for the invitation to join you and make this a power trio, if you will.
Oh, no. Thank you for being willing to join us. I know you've helped out quite a bit. Even when I first started, you jumped in, helped me out when I first started taking over the show. And you've been very gracious with your time. And for those of you who don't know, Mr. Theriault here is the man who provided us with our awesome intro. He did a great job on that. And when I popped it on him that we were bringing David on, he managed to whittle that update out within no time at all, very efficiently, and it sounded awesome. So definitely thank you, sir.
Oh, you're welcome. That's a labor of love right there. So anytime I get a chance to work on other people's stuff, and to serve other shows, I relish the opportunity, and I just love investing in other shows. You know, whether it's in a technical way, or just plugging other shows, on our show or whatever. Because first and foremost, I'm a fan of all the things that you guys are doing, and I think that honestly, I think that's just a reflection of the spirit of Coffee with Kenobi and Dan and Corey from the very beginning. So it's a collaborative effort for all of us, and that's what makes us a family. So it's cool.
Definitely well said, and definitely what makes us a family. And it's one of the things I've always loved about being a part of Coffee with Kenobi is we're just one big happy family, and it's been quite fun to be a part of. So we got this incredible Mortis arc that Dave Filoni and the cast of the Clone Wars gave us several years ago, and it's reaches far spanned just that season of Clone Wars. It's reached out and touched the saga and made an impact on it quite dramatically with this, with the way it expanded the story of the Force. So we want to go ahead and get into that discussion because I'm sure we will have a ton to talk about. So let's jump right into it. David, my friend, let's start with you. I mean, overall, when it comes to the impact of Mortis, what is your first thoughts on your opening thoughts on the Mortis arc as we go into this discussion?
Yeah, I think like we said, in our last episode, it's completely not possible to cover in depth everything in each of these three episodes, but we're having fun with it and trying to tie it to other things. And this isn't exhaustive, but one of my initial thoughts is I go back to the featurette for the Altar of Mortis. That was the second of the three episodes. And in that featurette, Dave Filoni talks about Christian Taylor and trying to guide him after getting guidance from George Lucas himself about what to do. And, you know, just like you've said in the two previous episodes, we're going to try to talk about this arc's influence on not only Rebels, but the entire Star Wars universe. And, you know, one of the things that sticks out to me the most is that one of the mandates or one of the guiding directions that Dave Filoni gave to Christian Taylor was to visualize, when he was writing these three episodes, visualize these episodes as all in essence taking place in the Dagobah tree. So it's all symbolic, all metaphor. And so there can be a lot of different viewpoints on, you know, all three of these episodes. And so, you know, that's kind of my initial starting point, that this arc is supposed to tie to, at that time it was, six movies, right? It wasn't, the four new ones. Cause this came out in 2011. And so, so Disney bought it in April of 2012. So at that time, you know, Dave Filoni's guidance was to make this tie into all six movies at that time. And, you can definitely see that, that it did that. So that's just a jumping off point for me. Those are my initial thoughts. Clearly Mortis does tie to all six episodes.
Very good. Very good. Randy, same question for you. How do you feel about Mortis and its ties into the rest of the saga?
I feel like it really contributes to the timelessness of the Force and the timelessness. Like, I'm always, as a pastor, I'm always trying to find just the connections and kind of discover what the worldview is as far as just philosophies. And I know, David, you're a professional in the psychology realm, and so that there's some crossover here that I'm looking forward to kind of talking to you guys about. But I think this is the first time, if I'm not mistaken, this is the first time that we really see the nature of the Force as far as the Force as an entity. And what I mean by that is that the Force functions outside of time. You know, the idea that these three episodes started and ended with a conversation with Rex and no time had passed. So the Force functions outside of time. We also know that the Force, there's a foreknowledge. As far as like the Force is able to show Anakin these visions of Darth Bane from 1,000 years before, and so there's just a full kind of revealing of just the supernatural and some of the characteristics of the Force, and that's really what it speaks to me, and that's why I've always felt like, You know, there's the surface of the episodes, and then there's the depth. And it seems as though the more I dig, I'm not finding the bottom of it. And then the more I discover and the more I read in, whether it's canon or Legends, more is revealed about Mortis. It's really cool and very clever and incredibly creative. And so those are my kind of initial thoughts.
Very good. Very good. I mean, you're right. This is one of the first episodes where we get a glimpse of the timelessness of the Force. And outside of the EU, I think this is the first time in canon we get a glimpse of a species, or not a species, but we get a glimpse at the fact that the Force isn't solely a Jedi and Sith power as well. We have Force wielders out there that can wield it and open the huge door. And when it comes to storytelling, at that point in Star Wars, so definitely it's a very, very open-ended diamond mine of knowledge. Yeah. And you're right. I don't think if we sat down and went snapshot by snapshot through each episode, frame by frame, I don't think we could ever get down to the very depth of what this episode could mean. Because it's always going to be growing and expanding, and with its influence over every one of the movies and the saga overall. Yes. And that's what's so awesome about Star Wars and about this arc too, is if the story's always growing, it's always expanding, which is awesome. Mm. So let's start by just discussing in general of course we've both, everybody's kind of hit on the Force already. So let's talk about the Force. That what we learn about the Force from this. I mean, we see the time, as Randy mentioned, the timelessness of the Force. And we know that ties in, of course, directly into Rebels, with the world between worlds and the timeless nature of that area, where Ezra could go to pretty much any point in time he wanted to, and be a part of it. And this story kind of opened up that world. We'll start with you, Randy, with the timelessness of the Force, and of course tying into world between worlds. Where is this going to? I mean, this is one of those. It's like, where's this end at this point? Because the whole galaxy, the whole time, I mean, it's not even the galaxy, the whole time is a template now. You know, time travel was one of those things we always got from Star Trek. You know, we never thought we'd have that option in Star Wars. But here we are, we have a very real option of potential time travel occurring. What are your thoughts on the temporal nature of the Force?
Okay, so what Luke and I have discovered over the years of talking about Legends and the Legends timeline is we've kind of discovered what the good is and what evil, or what good is and what is not good or what's bad. The ultimate good is the will of the Force. How we bumped into that is the book Traitor in the middle of the New Jedi Order series. It was Jacen Solo going through incredible suffering that was inflicted upon him by Vergeer. Just because there was pain and there was suffering, what Vergeer taught us about the Force is that pain and suffering doesn't necessarily mean evil. And so it was the will of the Force that he would suffer so he could learn something about the Force. And you see that all through the original trilogy as well, that the will of the Force doesn't necessarily mean the light side wins every time. The will of the Force allowed Darth Vader to come to power. And that's not necessarily, you know, the good guys win. You know, it's not necessarily warm and fuzzy, but it was the will. If you put yourself in, insert yourself in the timeline at certain points, and you're under, consider yourself kind of at one point in the storyline under imperial rule, and under the tyranny of the leadership of the emperor, then things aren't going well. But still, the will of the Force is what stands. The will of the Force is what's good, because it's leading to a time where Darth Vader will eventually redeem himself and redeem the galaxy by killing the Emperor. So so I say all that to say that that it's not necessarily, when we talk about time travel, I think in other instances, it's people traveling through time. And what really in Star Wars, especially in light of A World Between Worlds, and, you know, a little bit here with the Mortis trilogy, we see how it's the Force that controls the opening and the closing of that door. That's why the Emperor was trying so hard to get into that World Between Worlds, but the Force was not letting him. It was a struggle. It was strife. But with Ezra, it was an open door. It was opportunities leading to other opportunities that led to him entering into the World Between Worlds. So I kind of, in the theology of Star Wars, I've found that the ultimate good is the will of the Force. And it's changed. That's changed since Disney took over, and especially since the prequel, or that the sequels have come out. It's not necessarily the will of the Force anymore. Now it's not dark and light, absolute and point of view, you know, from a certain point of view. It's not those things anymore. It's starting to get gray, and it's starting to get more, the choice is up to the user. And that's a huge paradigm switch from the old old trilogy to this current trilogy. That's a huge switch, because the control is now up to the user. And we're even at the place where we can see, well, and there's even discussion going on, like Han Solo kind of had the Force, you know, the Force is in everyone. And so that's kind of some theology that's kind of changed, because that's not what it was in the legend, during the Legends and EU, and even during the original trilogy, that wasn't necessarily our understanding of the Force. And so, you know, I see the Mortis trilogy as, you know, just that the ultimate power of the father, you know, grabbing the tip of a lightsaber and pushing it toward the hilt and extinguishing it. The first time we saw that, that was a shocker, because up until that point, a lightsaber was like, you know, I mean, that was the weapon of all weapons. There's nothing, you know. There's nothing except for the Beskar Gam of the Mandalorians that could even, you know, withstand the blow from a lightsaber. And he uses his bare hand and extinguishes it to the hilt, just like with one sweep of his hand. And all of a sudden there's like, okay, there's a higher power than, you know, these things that the Jedi have constructed or whatever. So, I mean, I could go on forever, and I'm already geeking out. I'm loving this already. And so, David, I'd love to hear what your thoughts are, especially from the psychological like angle of this whole thing, because I certainly don't have everything figured out or whatever. It's just my kind of playing around in my mind and in my heart.
Well, yeah, to jump in. No, Randy, you got me going. The brain juices are flowing, and I think I could probably riff for about 2-3 hours over what you just said right there without any problems. I love your insight. That's why I'm always geeked to be on with you, buddy. Couple things. Aaron, if you want me, to just dive right in, Aaron, and go with it?
Go right ahead.
Okay. You know, one of the things that, you know, kind of go off a few things off what Randy said. One is, A World Between Worlds. You really have to watch that and to answer the question of how does this Mortis trilogy tie into Rebels. And so I've been watching that, and I watched it, I think, once or twice yesterday, that episode of Rebels. And one of the things I thought about is this issue of time that Randy brought up. And if you remember, the father said that the son had violated the laws of time by showing Anakin his future. And I wrote a little note to myself, did Ezra violate the laws of time saving Ahsoka? Mm. And, you know, going with what you said, Randy, maybe not so. You know, it just, like you said, happens just in the blink of an eye between talking to Rex. They do the Mortis trilogy, they're back to talking to Rex. So that's just something that I was thinking about a little bit. A second thing off of what you said, Randy, is before I got on tonight with you guys, I wrote down, and I'm looking at it right now in my notepad. I wrote down episode 1, episode 2, The Clone Wars seasons 1 through 6, episode 3, Solo, Rebels seasons 1 through 4, Rogue One, episode 4, episode 5, episode 6, episode 7, 8, and 9. And, it was so insightful, Randy, to hear you talk about this paradigm shift in how the Force is seen, because, you know, when the father, what was he? I was trying to go off of something you said. I guess I'll just go back a little bit on this. Okay. Looking at all these episodes, I thought that, like, I go back in my mind to November of 2014, and we got that little 80-second clip of what was going to be, you know, when The Force Awakens, but it was Snoke saying, there's been an awakening, have you felt, you know? And so I thought about this, again, just looking at this visually, what I just mentioned, you know, looking at all the episodes, looking at the two animated series, the two Star Wars stories, there really does feel like that balance issue. And that's what I was just going to mention a minute ago, the father mentioning balance all the time. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, there it is. That's what I was thinking about, Randy, what you said, like this, what's the will of the Force? And one of the things you see the father say in this Clone Wars episode was he instructs Anakin in the third episode of this arc, which is The Ghost of Mortis. He tells Anakin, consistent with what you said, Randy, not to, you know, what does he think, but he tells Anakin to go consult with the Force, right? And then who shows up but Qui-Gon. And so, again, this is all 2011 before the sale to Disney. And so, yeah, I started thinking about all those things you said and how these episodes really show that. I love that he goes and consults with the will of the Force and that is the good. The last thing I would say, kind of this third part, just to kind of bounce off of you, Randy, and to talk about this issue of time and so on, is in our last episode, I was talking to Aaron about the fortune cookie for this third episode.
Right.
And it says what here? I have it in my book. He who seeks to control fate shall never find peace. That's consistent with what you said. You want to try to do it yourself, like the Emperor, like the Son, like Anakin, or do you want to go with the will of the Force? And the example I brought up, if you remember it from the last episode, is from the AA perspective, which is
I do.
Remember that, you know, it describes our self will as what do they say in the book? A bone crushing juggernaut whose ultimate victory is your ruin. You know, mm-hmm. It's a bone crushing juggernaut, and so I do like that view of it being more, let's consult with the will of the Force versus, well, what do we just think? You know, that's what the Emperor does. That's what Anakin does. That's what the Son does. And it goes nowhere. So it was fascinating to hear you say that there's been this paradigm shift. And I've got to process that more. I guess within what? Episode 7 and 8, right? I guess with Rey and stuff like that.
Yeah, I would say that the switch is between the switch is between 6 and 7, because that's really when the story group has taken over and kind of I have this feeling that, and I have this philosophy that they're trying to recapture George's original intent in writing this whole series and writing this whole saga. And originally, George Lucas and still is more of a Unitarian or a relativist. You know, he's saying that all roads lead to the same truth, and what's good for you is good for you. What's good, you know, what's right for you is right for you, and what's right for someone else, you know, is right for someone else. It's kind of like this coexist kind of thing. And he inserted that into the Star Wars theology originally. That the problem that he ran into at the very end of Return of the Jedi is that somehow someone has to stand for an absolute, and in order for that to happen, someone's going to have to break a rule in the Star Wars universe, and the person that breaks that rule is Luke Skywalker. Because up until the very end of Return of the Jedi, it's Palpatine using absolute truth and really brutal honesty all through the prequels and all through the original trilogy, and the absolute truth is what the Emperor used to manipulate. He didn't lie; he told the truth, but he manipulated by using truth. He was, I have the dark side. Use my power, Anakin. It has only together can we, can we save Padme from certain death? He used the truth, and it was the Jedi that were all about, relativism, and it was a Jedi that, yes, it was true, but only from a certain point of view, and he wasn't really your father from a certain point of view. And so there's like this relativism thing which works in this universe until Luke throws his lightsaber down and says, no, he throws it out absolutely. And he stands on an absolute truth. And he says, no, I am a Jedi like my father before me. In other words, from a certain point of view is not going to win the day. I'm standing on an absolute and saying, no, I am a Jedi like my father before me, and you've lost. You have lost, Emperor. And so he moves from that relative, certain point of view kind of philosophy, and he rebels against Yoda and Obi-Wan, and he stands on an absolute truth, and it's eventually that absolute truth that leads to the victory. But now it's different. Now it's this. There's a gray area or. Use the dark side. You know, there's a balance between dark and light, and that's the whole conversation between Rey and Luke on Octo. That whole dilemma. You know, she's dealing with, this absolute truth thing, and he's saying, "No, man, there's dark, there's light," and she's actually playing with dark and light, and he gets freaked out. Like, okay, you didn't even stop at the dark side. You didn't even hesitate, and he freaks out. She's like, "Well, she doesn't know any better." So she's just playing between dark and light, like they're equal, like there's no. So there, that's the paradigm switch that I'm talking about between 6 and 7, and that's kind of what you were alluding to, David, is that, and because the nature of the Force has changed now, in my opinion, and a nickel will get you a cup of coffee, but the nature of the Force and the theology of the Force has changed since Disney has taken over and since the story group has taken over. And what they're trying to do is capture that original kind of like balance between the two, use one truth, kind of a syncretism, use one truth when it benefits you, use the dark side and power when it benefits you, So they are actually correcting the ship and bringing it back to George Lucas's original theology when he started this whole thing.
Wow.
And that's all I have to say about that.
Wow, you just, man, mind blown right there.
Well, thank you, everybody, for listening to Rebels Reaction. No. Y'all have a great night.
Okay, so
just kidding.
I have to stay balanced. Like, I want to know what you guys think. I'm not necessarily on that. Like, I'm not the host of this show, so like the value really is us discussing not necessarily that particular topic, but you know, the son, the daughter, the dark, the light, the right, the wrong, the good, the evil. Like, I think that's what Mortis kind of like. It's like a snow globe. Mortis was, that's why it's so different. Mortis rocked our world, and we're like still spinning, trying to figure out, you know, still waiting for the snowflakes to fall and settle. And I don't feel like, especially after World Between Worlds, I feel like this is still spinning around and there's still snow everywhere.
Oh yeah. World Between Worlds just shook it up even more. I gotta say, that was probably the most well said. Well, that's all I could say. I was sitting here going, "Wow!" I'll just field the questions, and y'all just go right at it because this is incredible. But I mean, this is what's so awesome about this episode is we're getting this whole concept of the Force, and it's being turned upside down. From what we knew what it was at that time, and now what we're seeing now after the Disney takeover, it's exploding into a whole new concept. And one of my favorite things about this episode, I mean, we always knew there was the light side, there was the dark side, there had to be balance, but in this episode, it is so vividly animated and put right there in front of us that you can't help but understand dark, light, that it's perfectly balanced by the father in this. And just seeing that vivid reality of the Force just was unlike anything we had seen before. We see the daughter who was with the light side of the Force, and she's bright light. I mean, she's very radiant, very bright, very almost very self-spoken. Then we have the dark side, which looks a lot like the Inquisitor, voiced by the incredible Sam Witwer, who's of course voiced Maul and voiced the Emperor. I mean, there's. Man, since chills up your spine.
Absolutely.
With some of the evilness he could put in his voice. So it was perfectly voiced, which just again added to the mystique of the dark and the light at that point. David, let's go to you. Let's start with you with the vivid descriptions and sights that we see throughout all three of these episodes, with the dark and the light and the balance that must be maintained. What are your thoughts overall on that, and where the Chosen One fits into that?
Yeah, I love that we're going in this direction, because this just gets so deep. And I think about what, you know, originally attracts us to this story. And I, you know, going again, I've said it a million times and I date myself, you know, I'm 8 years old in 1977. And just what stuck out to me so much at that time was when Luke is using the Force and, you know, Obi-Wan, the mentor, you know, you know, the mythos of a mentor and the mythos of the Force in this, and Luke uses it, turns off his targeting computer, and I'm just sitting there as an 8-year-old just biting my nails, and he shoots the lasers, the torpedoes down the shaft there and blows up the Death Star. And I just felt like it was, it was good triumphing over evil. And it seemed really clear. And now, you know, I see online and different places people talking about the gray, like Randy was saying, not the vivid colors, but the gray, that there's you know, is it the gray Jedi and stuff? And I think initially I was kind of confused when I heard that stuff. But now, you know, as the three of us have talked and I've, you know, spent more time looking at all this, it seems like they're really going there. You know, I even, you know, I'm trying to think about, was it in Lost Stars with Claudia Gray where, you know, the characters, what is it, Thane Kyrell, and I'm trying to remember their names, Sienna? I'm trying to remember the two main protagonists or the two main characters. And then there's, you know, the view of, you know, innocent people on the Death Star, you know, and I remember reading that and getting different versions and, you know, here's the side of the Imperials and here's the side of the Rebels and, you know, the Rebels are terrorists and is the Empire terrorists and just a lot of, you know, murkiness in the water and bringing about the gray versus those vivid colors. You know, I think it's always good to generate conversations and stuff like that. But I do really like that there's real clarity there, at least in the Mortis arc, about who's good and who's bad. And, and you know, the brother clearly represents, you know, the impulsiveness and the evil side. Even the father says when the daughter dies, the Sith have gained power in the universe. You're like, holy mackerel. And, you know, and the daughter being the light side. So I don't know, you know, Randy brought up the issue that, you know, I talk about with my friends and I've talked about with as many people as I can. And that is there ultimate truth or is there relativism? And it says a lot about the person and about their views of life and death and the universe and what's right and wrong. You know, I do have, you know, we can get nervous on either side. I do get nervous when people say what's your right is right and what my right is right. Everybody's right is right because, I mean, this gets into deep stuff and I'm not going to say too long. But, you know, the thing I always bring up is when people start to go towards relativism, I start to think about Nazi Germany and what they thought was right. I don't know that many of us agreed with was right, particularly their treatment. So it's a dangerous place to go with relativism at times. It's interesting, you know, again, bouncing off you, Randy, you know, looking at these are the deepest issues, you know, free will versus determinism. Is there ultimate truth? Is there relativism? And, you know, Star Wars gets us talking about all these things. And these are the kind of conversations that are, that can be really fun. Now, people can go down really dark places with these kind of conversations, but, you know, I, on here, we'll keep them pretty, I guess what, pretty level-headed and pretty fun.
Right, so, yeah.
You know, and you can do that, Randy, and I can do it, and so can Aaron.
Yeah.
But I know a lot of people, right, lately, particularly in the Star Wars universe, who this kind of conversation would lead to a lot of negativity, but here it just leads to a lot of fun. Thoughts. And so again, that's what I love about Star Wars is it gets conversations like this going. But, so when you asked me that, Aaron, I've got, you know, just hours and hours of thoughts. That's how deep this Mortis arc is. So, but I'll cut it right there.
Very good. Very good. Hey, how about you, Randy, with the light, the dark, I mean, we see it vividly described in this episode. Even to the point where when Ahsoka is taken over by the dark side, it's so vividly animated and actions are, the actions she takes or the way she behaves is so vividly different. You see that difference between the dark and the light. I mean, especially coming from a Legends background, what are your thoughts on this overall?
Well, the sun, as I was listening to your podcast, your last podcast, and I had texted you, Aaron, just to get it out of my head and just to say it out loud to somebody, cause I was listening and I'm like, I got to text you, Aaron, cause I got, this is so, okay. So the sun is dark side, and which we associate with the Sith, and only the Sith deal in absolutes. Now, but the son is breaking every rule in the Mortis trilogy, every rule. And we know that because the daughter is bound by those rules and is the light side and will not break rules. In fact, you can't, you know, she, you know, she takes Obi-Wan to the dagger. You can't touch it. I can't go there. Or, you know, or the father does that. You know, we can't go there, but you can touch it or whatever. That's the only way to stop the son. And so the daughter is bound absolutely by these rules and this structure, but the son can play around and break whatever rules he wants. And the consequence of that is Ahsoka is influenced by the dark side and kind of possessed by, or, you know, is changed into a dark side character as we watch. But as you both were talking just now, this is kind of cool. I'm just kind of bumping into this like real time, like right now. The son and the daughter are the son representing breaking the rules, but still there's an absolute, which is different than Sith. The Sith, only the Sith deal in absolutes. So the son's breaking the rules. The daughter now is the light side, but she's keeping all the rules, which is different than the Jedi Order. They're like, oh, you know, from a certain point of view, you know, so they're all about that, right? So these two end up perishing in this arc, and the father eventually ends up perishing as well. And the father was the representation of the balance, and that's what you said, David, and I agree with that. Like, the father's a representation of the balance. And then all three of them die, but they leave that balance in the care of Anakin, even though he doesn't remember it. Anakin eventually is responsible for balance. And that's why the theology changes, because now there's balance. And that's why there's an awakening, because now it's starting to get unbalanced or starting to be, or whatever the new dilemma is that we don't know yet, that we're kind of looking forward to. But the father represented the balance between the two. And now Anakin is the balance maker, and he brings balance to the Force. And now we're dealing with gray areas. Why? Because there's no dark, there's no light, there's balance now. And, oh, man, that just popped into, like, just now I have it written down. So as we're talking about the son and the daughter, and how the daughter is not acting at all like the Jedi Council and the Jedi Order. She's acting like there's absolutes and state of the truth. The son is acting like there's no rules, man. I'm going to break them all, or I'm inconsiderate of the rules. And so the story group using the Mortis arc kind of corrects this mistake or corrects this brokenness in philosophy between the Sith and the Jedi, and using the father as the kind of the go-between, as the representation of the balance. And then when all three are taken away, the balance ensues because Anakin provides that balance when he kills the Emperor. And now we have this balance of light and dark and gray area in between. And Ahsoka says no to the Jedi Order, but, you know, she ends up with two beautiful white lightsabers that aren't red and they're not blue or green or whatever. They're white because there's this balance that exists. And, oh, man, that stuff is just like, I mean, to me is the son and the daughter, a representation of the brokenness of the system. And Anakin saves us from that dishonesty as far as the roles of the son and the daughter. And now we are functioning through the eyes of Rey. We're functioning in this like state of balance. And right now is the first time that really is hitting me. And I've really considered that. And man, that is just, you're right, guys. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, yeah, no, to go off of what you said, Randy, I'm looking at my timeline and I'm thinking about episode 6, Return of the Jedi. I'm looking at this, and then the 30-year span between that and episode 7. And then, consistent with what you said, we've got, you know, Anakin dies, obviously, from tossing the Emperor down the shaft. But then we find out you know, we don't know this until episode 8, but that Luke has shut himself off from the Force.
Right, right.
Oh, right. So then between 6 and 7, what we're starting to learn more about, and apparently learn even more from the new animated show, Star Wars Resistance, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to learn about more of what has gone on between episodes 6 and 7. But what I start to visualize is Luke has shut himself off. The First Order is growing. Snoke's obviously doing stuff. You know, Aaron and I talked about, you know, Thrawn and some of the stuff there and some of the stuff in the unknown regions and, you know, and what's going on. But it seems like then that makes sense that as the First Order grows to power over those 30 years, Luke removes himself from the equation to a certain degree, right?
Right.
That, you know, then you hear Snoke saying, well, wait a minute. You know, we're doing fine. Things are growing. We're building our arsenal here. And then all of a sudden, what just happened? Oh, there's been an awakening. And it almost feels like here's the Force at work again to bring balance. So here comes Rey introduced to bring that about. And so that would make sense that between 6 and 7, it goes from being balanced to imbalanced again. And that's why we have, you know, even Rey talking about it in episode 8, right? She says there's been an awakening in me. There's
right.
Something has awoken. It just gives me chills thinking about
that. Oh, dude. And the line, wow. Darkness rises and light to meet it. Oh, you know, yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Man.
Wow.
You know who gets this more than any other character? And Aaron, I'd love to hear if you agree, or maybe it was Luke that got it before all of us, but I think the character that gets this is, I feel nothing. All this is the Force wills it, right? Like, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, he's yeah. the guy that gets it. Like, you know, just even if it means sacrificing my life, it's okay. Cause the Force is with me and I'm one with the Force, you know, like, I don't know. He got it.
it was Chirrut from Rogue One. You know,
right.
he was probably more in touch with the Force than any other non-Force wielder or Jedi that we've seen. I mean, he was confident in his belief in the Force. I mean, he's constantly, I'm one with the Force. The Force is with me. All is as the Force wills. I mean, he walks out there, best a squad of stormtroopers, as a blind man with a stick. I mean, right. Granted, they're stormtroopers. They can't shoot the broadside of a barn. But at the same point, you know, still, you know, you figure, you know, what, 10, 15 got stormtroopers versus Chirrut? They would have had better odds than that. And what's the first thing that gets said after it's over? Cassian walks up and goes, "See a Jedi?"
Right, right.
Yeah. And that's the first thing they go to. I mean, he's ultimately connected with the Force in a way that hadn't been seen before. And a lot of that, and a lot, we can see that because of this. Mm-hmm. It opened up that door where we can see these other beings connected to the Force, whether it's the Chirrut and Baze in Rogue One, or the Bindu in
right
in Rebels, but even the Pergil had a Force connection there, and through, I mean, because they were able to connect with Ezra. I mean, it was there's it opened up a door that is going to be explored for many years to come, as books and comics and movies and new shows are being made. We're going to get to see this more and more because it opens up a world where you don't have to be a Jedi. You don't have to be a Sith to have that Force power. I think Solo said it best in The Force Awakens. It's not how the Force works. No truer statement probably was ever said in Star Wars at this point, because it's not how the Force works anymore.
Right.
It has changed. It has grown, and it has made quite a difference in our saga and as we go. It's and I got your text right here. I pulled it up when you mentioned it. I scrolled back through it and I found it and pulled it up.
Okay.
I'm going to read it real quick. Then we're going to take a break to let David stew on it for a minute before he responds to it, because I want to get his thoughts on this text. Because you texted me Thursday night of last week and said that you said, and I quote, "Listening to the newest episode, it's crazy how the daughter has to play by the rules. She pays so close attention to the rules. The son disregards them." Of course, I responded with, "Yeah, I know she defines order while the son defines chaos." And here's a statement that got me, and this is where I want to get David's thoughts on this after the break. You replied with, "It's a weird paradox. Dark side deals in absolutes but disregards order. Light is from a certain point of view, i.e. relativism, but plays by the rules. I think we found a broken system here. Good guys are the relativists, but only way to win a fight is for an absolute. It's broken. George had creative schizophrenia." So with that, we're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to let David go right into the statement. And with that, we will wrap part one of our Mortis arc wrap-up episode. Make sure you tune in 2 weeks when the second and final part of the discussion is released with our guest, Randy Theriault. Till then, make sure you're following us on Twitter at Rebels Reactions. Of course, go to coffeewithkenobi.com to check out all the latest Star Wars news and some of the greatest blogs on the planet by some of the greatest bloggers in the world. We have some great stuff going on there. Check out our sister shows and our family of shows on the Coffee with Kenobi Network. Of course, the flagship show, Coffee with Kenobi with Dan Z. Of course, make sure you're checking out Comics with Kenobi. And, of course, Legends Library, of course, with our guest Randy, hosting with Luke. And, of course, Lattes with Leia. So make sure you check them out. Subscribe to them on iTunes if you haven't. Make sure you leave them some good feedback as well. Subscribe to Rebels Reactions if you haven't either. We would appreciate that. And, of course, make sure that if you haven't, leave us a review. All we ask is that you make it a good one. Until next time, my friends, remember, this is the Rebels podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off.
Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi. As well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed, @CoffeeWithKenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.